Hello, ladies and gentlemen. I'm your host, Mehmet Devrim, from the Terrorism Analysis platform, and you're listening to our second episode of our ongoing podcast series on terrorism in Africa. In our last episode, we discussed the relationship between military coups and terrorism in the Sahel region with Mr. Isodare Aga. In this episode, we are going to discuss the financing of terrorism with Mr. Mursal Bayram from the Social Sciences University of Ankara. Mr. Bayram, could you please introduce yourself for our audiences so they know you as well?
I am Mursal Bayram, Associate Professor at Social Sciences University of Ankara, and I am currently leading the African Studies Department at Institute for Area Studies in the same university. My research area covers African political history and the role of international actors in general in African politics and economy, and terrorist organization is a part of our courses, our African political history curriculum.
Thank you very much for coming to this podcast series, Mr. Bayram. To get straight into the topic, our first question is regarding the financing of terrorism itself. Finance is a core aspect of terrorism. The larger and more active a terrorist organization is, the more money it needs. Terrorist organizations in Africa are also no exception to this. So, how are terrorist organizations in Africa getting funded in the first place?
Thank you very much. First of all, as you know, as defined by the Interpol, any crime which results in a profit can be used to finance terrorism. Therefore, a country may face terrorism finance risk, even if there is a low risk of a terrorist attack. And sources of terrorist funding include low-level fraud, kidnapping for ransom, the misuse of non-profit organizations, the illicit trade in commodities such as oil, diamonds, gold, narcotic, and digital currencies as well. We can say that the sources of terrorist funding may originate from illegal activities like trafficking in drugs, weapons, or human beings, or legitimate activities such as the donations of the members or the abuse of some non-profit gains. New funding techniques are also found in these days. For instance, Daesh or ISIS or Islamic State act like a state, and it recurs to new methods of funding. And these methods can be considered more inherent for a state, such as levering taxes or exploiting natural resources, such as natural gas and oil. In 2015, ISIS made about 330 million dollars from taxation and extortion alone. As for Africa, for instance, Al-Shabaab, at one point, generated almost $100 million a year solely from taxes, fees, and extortion. Some groups, including those in Africa, even tax people for not joining the group. In this way, these groups managed to expand both their membership and their funding. In the context of Africa, again, some groups also charge protection taxes. For instance, governments of some Nigerian states is claimed to have paid Boko Haram monthly fees to evade attacks. You know, Boko Haram employs kidnapping for ransom against school children, tourists and wealthy individuals. And Boko Haram's ransoms range between $3 to $10 million. This terrorist group uses many other methods and techniques. For instance, it can sell goods, it can provide logistics, phones and SIM cards. It can rely on voluntary or mandatory contributions from group members, or it can collect alms through the poor and needy. It can extort funds from civilians, and it applies cross-border arms smuggling as well. And here we understand that groups, terrorist groups in Africa uses many diverse techniques, and they operate in various countries. For instance, Boko Haram operates not only in Nigeria, but also in Mali, Burkina Faso, Nigeria, etc.
Mr. Bayram, while you have described and touched upon a few methods of financing terrorism, there is one particular form we would like to focus on today, narco-terrorism. Narco-terrorism has become an actively used term in security circles, the academia, and even public media. What is the role of narcotics in the financing of terrorism?
Especially the region of West Africa is at risk of becoming an epicenter for drug trafficking and the crime and corruption associated with this drug trafficking. At least 50 tons of cocaine from South African countries are transiting West Africa every year, and these cocaine heads north, where they are worth almost $3 billion on the streets of European cities. And most of the cocaine entering from South Africa to Africa, South America to Africa, makes landfall around Guinea-Bissau and Ghana. Previously, you know, Guinea-Bissau was classified as a narco state. Much of the drugs are shipped to Europe by drug mules on commercial flights. And upon arrival, the cocaine is mainly distributed by Western African criminal networks. And the sizes of cocaine is doubling every year, which has a destabilizing impact on security, development, and politics in Africa. Drug cartels not only buy real estate, banks, and businesses, but also they can buy elections, candidates, and parties. In brief, they buy power in Africa. Regarding the connection between terrorism and drug trafficking, there is some evidence that extremist groups like Al-Qaeda in Islamic Maghrib, AQIM, and the Movement for Oneness and Jihad in West Africa, MOJWA, are using criminal activities. And these activities include some involvement in regional drug smuggling networks as well. We do not know clearly the character, size, and scope of the cooperation between drug traffickers and terrorist groups, but current narratives emphasize strong links between drug trafficking and terrorist groups in Africa. Why this narrative is so widespread? We can count three main reasons. First, the search for a sensationalist headline by the media may have contributed to this conflation of terrorism drug trafficking. Second, and most importantly, local governments in Africa are aware that by emphasizing or inflating any connections to terrorist organizations, particularly Al-Qaeda, it becomes easier for them to attract donors' attention and additional funds. And shifting the focus to extremist groups and placing disproportionate blame for drug trafficking on groups like Al-Qaeda, AKIM, Mujwa, also serves the purpose of hiding the involvement of local political elites in criminal activities, including the narcotics business. I think this is a really significant and critical aspect of the nexus between drug trafficking and terrorism. In this way, the strengthening of the drug and terror nexus is functional to key players involved in the political economy of narcotics in West Africa. Yes, there is a connection, especially in the Sahara region. Counterterrorism operations, you know, in the region, in part succeeded in limiting, for instance, AKIM's abilities to carry out attacks. And because of this limitation, some terrorist groups have been forced into criminal activities in order to survive. But we should emphasize that it is usually elements within the extremist groups rather than the entire group itself that are involved in drug trafficking, because such criminal activities are against Al-Qaeda ideology, and therefore it results in some fractures within the group. The involvement of Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghrib in criminal drug trafficking activities has also changed over the time. Originally, they simply charged traffickers for passing through the territory they controlled. But then the group has increased in its involvement. Both Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghrib and the Mujwa now offer armed escorts, for instance, to drug convoys, and they charge between 10 and 15% of the value of the cocaine. Lastly, besides from the Al-Qaeda in the Maghrib and Mujwa and Boko Haram, there have been some reports and investigations about the link between Middle Eastern organizations and drug traffickers. For instance, it is believed that there is a tight link between South American drug traffickers and the Lebanese Hezbollah. The cocaine trade through West Africa is believed to be a very important source of income for Hezbollah. So not only the groups in Africa, but also the groups in other regions of the world benefit from the drug trade between South America and Africa.
If possible, I would like to dive deeper into this aspect of financing terrorism and ask a few follow-up questions. First of all, what kind of steps are necessary to stop financing of terrorist organizations through narcotics? And are there any different from steps that would be needed to stop other organizations involved in the trafficking of narcotics? And lastly, how does narcoterrorism compare to drug trafficking in general?
Let's start with your last question. Terrorist groups are usually ideologically or politically motivated, but drug traffickers do not have such a motivation, and they are generally categorized under organized crime groups. Terrorist groups often wish to compete with governments for legitimacy, but drug traffickers do not compete with governments in general. Terrorist groups usually seek media attention, whereas drug traffickers do not want such media attention. Terrorist victimization is generally less discriminated than the violence used by organized crime groups or drug traffickers. These are the differences, but there are some similarities as well. Both terrorist groups and drug traffickers operate secretly and usually from an underground network. They both use violence on civilian victims. They intimidate victims. They use some similar tactics, for instance, kidnapping, assassination, extortion, protection money, etc. We know that terrorism is a big business in Africa. Boko Haram is believed to have an annual operating budget of $10 million. Al-Shabaab and Al-Qaeda in the Islamic Maghrib also make millions each year. The international community implements measures to counter these. And these measures include sanctions to Somalia, Mali, and Libya. The United States and other Western countries also prohibit financial support to more than a dozen foreign terrorist organizations in Africa. Despite these efforts, the continent's terrorists continue to make and spend money and are engaged in organized crime. Security professionals generally prefer to follow the money in terms of fighting the rise of terrorism in Africa. They think that governments could reduce attacks if they track the financing of terrorism. But today we know that these measures have hampered global banking, but not blocked terrorist money and left them with a wide budget, still a wide budget. United Nations Security Council also have some effective tools. For instance, it has a common legal framework consisting of universal anti-terrorist instruments. And we know that the UN Security Council imposed sanctions on members of the terrorist organizations. These sanctions include generally freezing of assets, travel ban, arms embargo, etc. But it is disputable, the effectivity of these measures and sanctions are disputable. Drug traders and terrorists, usually groups and networks, and their ways can be understood, identified, tracked, and disrupted if there is a strong will to eradicate the connection between these groups at both national and international levels. We should know that drugs are likely to make a significant contribution to the finance of terrorist groups in Africa, but kidnapping for ransom remains by far the most lucrative source of revenue. So the national and international community need to focus on this aspect, I think. Professionals and governments should draw up economic plans regarding the markets and social services, especially in newly recovered lands, and especially in Somalia, where Al-Shabaab is still active and is a quasi-state. African terrorists generally distort local markets. They generally purchase large quantities of conventional commodities. The state can replace what terrorists have offered. Because Boko Haram in some parts, AKIM and Al-Shabaab as well, act like a state, and they may offer education, healthcare, etc. So the state could replace what terrorists have offered to the public. Such interventions eventually enhance the social contract. These are the deeper ways or stronger ways to fight terrorism: the building of a social contract and the eradicating of the impacts, the public or social impacts of terrorist organization. The near-term temptation to collect heavy new taxes to pay for them, for instance, risks supporting resentment at the government's return. If Somalian government levy new taxes when it recovers territory in Somalia, then this causes a new resentment in the area. Lastly, Africans should understand the hypocrisy and violence behind terrorists' budgets. Al-Shabaab, for instance, extorts food meant for Somali famine victims, and it can divert charitable giving away from the poor. And all these groups are involved in organized crime as well. So explicit public affairs and strategic communications campaigns are needed to highlight government investments and reveal the terrorist abuses in Africa.
Mr. Bayram, thank you so much for allocating some of your time for us and giving us these insights into the financing of terrorist organizations and narco-terrorism in Africa. Ladies and gentlemen, with this we have reached the end of our second episode in our podcast series. In the next and final episode, we are going to talk about the two largest terrorist organizations in Africa, Boko Haram and Al-Shabaab. Stay tuned and see you in the next one.